So our presentation is entitled, As Far as the East is from the West, and it will be given to us by our brother Mark Whitaker. Brother Mark.
Well, good evening, everyone. This talk comes with a health warning. The health warning is this, that all the other talks that I've given so far, I kind of knew how long they would be to within, I don't know, 1 to 5 minutes. This one, I have no idea. It's... Well, I wasn't going to ask you to help out here, Jeff. I was going to actually say to Mary, Mary, wave when time is up. Or when I've overstepped the mark too much. This is a slightly different session this evening. You'd think I'd be speaking about Psalm 103, which happens to be my favourite psalm, but I've lifted the words from that psalm with no real relevance at all, other than we are in the West, and tonight I'm going to be talking about the East, and I do not mean anywhere on the East Coast of the US. Because what I'm going to be talking about is somewhere that makes even America look small. Now, I know you don't like to accept that, and frankly, even I was quite surprised to see this, that there are actually 11 time zones across Russia. 11 time zones from its west to its east. For those of you who don't know, and this is why I'm talking about this tonight, I've been the CBM UK link man for Russia and Belarus, since 2014, and I've been involved in working in Belarus mainly and Russia since about 2001. So this is me telling you, really giving you a perspective, if you like, on a different part of the world and a different group of brethren and sisters. It's so that those of you who are at CME can decide whether or not what RENAT has told you has any bearing on the truth or not. But here we go. Just to give you some idea of brothers and sisters, I know you're quite scattered in some ways in the US, but in Belarus, that I've been visiting for 20 years now, it's a country the size of England, and you probably don't know what that means, actually, do you? A bit bigger than that. Okay, a country the size of, Arizona, let's say. 20 brothers and sisters in the whole country. That's all there are. Ukraine. I should have also say I've accidentally become an area secretary as well in a bit of CBM reorganisation. So I now look after. We used to have East Europe and West Europe, and we now have a Northern Western Europe, and we have a South and Eastern Europe, and we have BKRU, which is my catchily titled area, which is Belarus, Kazakhstan, Russia, and Ukraine, which are, if you like, the main Russian-speaking countries within CBM UK's area of responsibility. So the B, Belarus, 20 brothers and sisters. Ukraine, something like about 80 brothers and sisters. It's always hard to know because some are very isolated. It's quite difficult to have communication with some of our brothers and sisters in more rural parts. There are brothers and sisters who pass off the scene, and it can be a while before you know if they're not ones that we've been able to visit or have easy contact with, or it's been all one way from us to them. Something like 160 brothers and sisters across Russia, and there's about 120 or so in Kazakhstan. Actually, the most... I've already finished already? Oh, move on. Sorry.
It's 5,500 miles.
Okay, be like that. Okay. Interesting thing, actually, is that Russia has... Russia stopped changing to have a daylight saving hours. So there's a point in the year where Moscow is 2 hours ahead of us, and another point in the year where it's 3 hours ahead of us. They've also taken out some of their time zones in the middle. So now, whereas Kazan in central Russia, that was 4 hours ahead of us, now when we visited in the summer, it's only 2 hours ahead. So you end up with the sun coming up really early in the morning and then going down quite early as well. Anyway, enough of that. Otherwise, we will never get there at all. Okay, so the sort of the impact of this massive scale, brothers and sisters, is that most brothers and sisters in these areas, not so much in Kazakhstan, where the truth is spread by family and neighbours talking to each other. It's a very different atmosphere and environment in Kazakhstan. But in Russia, which I'm mainly talking about, and Belarus, you know, they're really scattered. There's only one functioning ecclesia in the whole of that massive part of the world. And that functioning ecclesia, which actually is having to function online now, but it was functioning in person, was an ecclesia near Tomsk in a closed city called Seversk. Those of you who know Kostya Krasovin from Toronto area, Kostya comes from that area, and it's his family back there are the core of that one ecclesia out there in the wilds of Siberia. There's no history of fellowship in this part of the world. You know, we take it for granted. Look at us all now. You know, we've talked to people we've never met before, and you're all very friendly. We hope we're friendly back. You know, there is not that culture or history in this part of the world at all. So actually, brethren and sisters being scattered, there isn't necessarily the drive that we might have to say, why don't we get together? Because, you know, that's not how it was. I know communist era, kind of, was a long time ago now, but it lives on in a lot of the cultural aspects of life there. So that was, sorry, I should have said, yeah, that was Renat on the left. The reason for that picture there is that was a visit that when Renat was living in Montenegro, he and another brother, Igor Podgaisky from Montenegro, they made on our behalf to South Russia, to the Don region and the Krasnodar region. And they're visiting a brother and sister in the middle there who would never see another brother or sister from one end of the year to the other. And the sister with them on the right, Sister Victorina, with the stick, she moved over from Georgia, had real trouble getting a Russian passport, although she's Russian by nationality. And Igor and Renat had picked her up because she was on her own as well, and have taken her to visit this other brother and sister. You imagine that, if once a year, actually we only get to South Russia through these other Russians, maybe once every couple of years. That's your fellowship. Now that's tough, isn't it? Imagine keeping your faith in a situation like that. This is how we try to cover this vast area as a CBM team. Essentially, there's more brothers and sisters in BKRU than there are in the whole of the rest of Europe. So in a sense, we have a multiple team that's almost like a set of country teams, and we split it up. So we have Belarus. I don't know whether this pointy thing there. Wow, technology. You know, I'm well with it. So Belarus, that's been my patch for the last 20 years. Mary and I go out there, so we visit that typically. Another brother and sister look after what we call Moscow, St. Petersburg. Another look after what we call Central Russia, although it's not that central really, is it? But there you go, Western view. There's South Russia, which the Russians visit for us. Kazan region and those around it. The Urals, where the Ural Mountains are. And then this small patch over here with 16 brethren and sisters in it. 16. That's all the Siberia region. With an ecclesia somewhere around there. And then Kazakhstan, that is looked after remotely, because we cannot visit Kazakhstan. Christadelphians are outlawed there, having been evicted, at least as visitors, some years ago. And down here, of course, here in yellow is Ukraine. We'll perhaps come back to that later. So what we have is a CBM team where we kind of have a couple who will look after each region, and it's a bit of a family affair to a degree. Here's the team having a meeting. You just about see Mary's face on the left there, and me sitting at my laptop somewhere at the back. It's a team that the current team really has sort of two cores to it. One is my cousin, Brother Ian MacDonald, he and his wife, Sister Anna, went out and lived in Moscow back in 2000-2001. And having been out there, Ian and Anna said to his parents, my uncle and aunt, George and Jill MacDonald, they said, oh, you should really be part of the Russia team. Okay. And Anna said to her parents, well, you should really be part of the Russia team. Okay, we will be. And then I got involved because I'm his cousin. And then we got some of our other cousins involved. And then we got Mary's sister involved. And it's kind of, it's sort of like an extended family with a few other folks on there, including actually over here, Brother David Pierce. Any of you who read stuff like Milestones by Donald Pierce, well, this is Donald's big brother, David. And David and his wife, Sister Catherine, they are a fantastic couple. David's too old now to be insured to go on CBM visits. It's really sad because his final visit would have been when COVID, the curtains came down. But David looks after because you know, he likes little projects. He's been link man for Kazakhstan for the last donkey's years. He's also, until recently, been link man for Ukraine. And because that wasn't enough, we gave him Siberia as well. It's like, you have a small area, David. And he's sort of relinquishing them little by little because he can't visit. But then none of us can we? So we have this team who get together twice a year and plan and review the things we've done and try and work out how we're going to get out there. So let me try and give you some ideas to what it's actually like out there, because you've got some very different situations between brothers and sisters. Probably the most well off of families in the truth out in Russia is the Krasovin family. Actually, they're a very well educated family. You've got Yevgeny and Luba, the parents, who are you're talking like university professors. They lived in a closed city in Russia, one that doesn't appear on the maps because of the sort of nuclear activity that would be going on there. So you can't visit them there; they have to come out to you. But their son Dima, Kostya's brother, he and his wife, Sister Natasha, and their lads are there. They're a fairly, I won't say well off, but they're doing okay. We would think of them as dead poor, but you know, they're doing okay. They've probably got a car, and they have an okay house that's like under 3 foot of snow at the moment. You know, they've been able to go away on a cheap holiday to Egypt for a week or two in the winter. That's, you know, that they're at that kind of level. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is the couple here, the brother and sister with their arms around each other, the Tokarevas, and they're down in South Russia. So that's Igor Podgaisky's next to them, and Victorina with her crutch. That's from the same visit that Renat was on. You know, they have got no money at all. They've got four children, and they have, you know, a house that's just planks of wood held together. Work may be very hard to come by, and it won't pay well whatever they do. If they can make ends meet, it's the most they can do at all, and they will rely on some level of support if it can be got to them from brothers and sisters in the UK. You know, you've got that kind of spectrum, and there's probably more towards that end of the spectrum than at the other end. Here's a couple, not a couple actually, a mother and son, Sister Anna, who's now fallen asleep, and her son, Brother Vladimir, that we visited for years in Belarus. They live in a village. They're probably 50, 60 miles from the nearest brother or sister. It doesn't really make much odds because there's only one bus a day goes through their village of 24 houses that's right out in the sticks, with a really, really rough road to get in there. That's their house on the right there, and actually the living room that we're in is the living room, the dining room, it's the bedroom, it's the TV lounge, it's got all the books in it and everything. It's, you know, it's a very basic existence. You know, these folks, like those in the south of Russia, they heat their house in the winter because they have a central brick built oven, a furnace that they'll be feeding wood with all through the winter to try and get the heat to radiate out. That thing in the middle heats sort of the four rooms around it. That's a fairly difficult life. They get their water from a well just up the street, you know, proper well, buckets and everything. Their toilet is an outhouse that I would say has to be seen to be believed. But let me tell you, it doesn't, especially not in the depths of winter. They're very different relative situations of brothers and sisters there. And, you know, we are sensitive to that when we are there. That we don't want to be going in and sort of waving money and wealth around at them, because to them we are, however modestly we live at home, we will be seen as very wealthy indeed. And there's another kind of difference as well, which you see as you travel around these countries, and it's this kind of difference between city versus rural. Because, you know, in the cities, everybody lives in flats. You know, we think of blocks. Sorry, what do you call them? Apartments? Thank you. Okay. Sorry. Colloquialisms or English, Britishisms, shall we call them. Everybody lives in these apartment blocks, which is great because they're all centrally heated. The 1st of October or somewhere around then, the heating comes on, whether or not you need it. And I don't know, 1st of March or 31st of March, it goes off, whether or not it's warm enough yet. We've quite often been there, kind of at the cusp of those times when it has been roasting in the flats, in the apartments, and we just throw the windows open because it can be very, very hot. But at least you've, as long as you can pay the rent, you've got a beautifully warmed flat. And it's, although you know, that very often round the back where people park, they look disgusting. And we, in the UK, I should say, blocks of flats or apartments in the UK generally are, that's where people don't want to live, you know, unless it's a riverside new apartment block. Blocks of flats were built to rehouse people who were poor in Britain in the 50s and the 60s, and these look like that on the outside, but actually they can be very pleasant on the inside. Maybe not when you've filled it with 12 Christadelphians who all have been eating cabbage, and you know, you're trying to give them all lots of food and drink while they're there, and they've all brought some garlic sausage with them and the rest. You know, that kind of destroys the tranquility of a beautiful apartment. But when we stay, this is in Minsk, which is the capital of Belarus. You know, when we stay there, we're always surprised. The places we rent just for a weekend, we go up and it looks great. And if you're a brother or sister living in a city, you probably live in an apartment that feels nice and is comfortable, and is very different from the rural scene. Here's the rural scene. This is Sister Nina, also fallen asleep now in Christ, out in Belarus. There is no road to her house, which is just about visible, kind of visible there amongst the trees. Yes, that needs a well as well. She's got livestock running around outside, a couple of goats and a few chickens. There was a horse the first time I visited, but as her husband said at the time, the horse was soon going to be meat. And sure enough, it had gone next time. And again, that's another family. That was Nina and her husband, who were bringing up their grandchildren because her daughter and her daughter's husband were drunks and just frittered any money they had on drink. So she was bringing up her grandchildren, receiving a pension, a little bit of support from the state to do that. She relied quite heavily on brothers and sisters back in the UK who were sending out winter parcels or just clothes for the lads as these lads grew up. Because otherwise, you know, how could she afford clothes for them? You know, and so no running water, no electricity in her property there. You know, that's going to be lit by gas lamp, and they might have a gas jar they've gone and got. That's really a real tough life to live. And actually the rural situation right across Russia is like that. You know, people have moved to the cities because out in the sticks, you know, if you've not got power and you've not got running water, you know, who wants to live in a situation like that? But many of our brothers and sisters do. And you might think, you know, how on earth do we keep in contact with folks like that across that area? Well, this is what we try to do. And all I can say is up to 2020. Because what we were doing up till COVID closed everything down was trying to manage one visit per year. We would be able to visit Belarus twice because you could do 5 days without a visa, and Ukraine would get at least two visits because you could go without a visa to Ukraine. And generally, our little team who went out, two or three brothers and sisters, would maybe hold a mini Bible weekend. So brothers and sisters would come in, they'd be put up in an apartment or in a hotel. Hotel is kind of a relative term as well, let's just say. And then after a weekend of fellowship and study together, you know, that's the only time in the year you might get that. Then there's those who couldn't make it. So we would try and go out and visit those brothers and sisters in their homes. But all through the year, along, you know, if there's just that one thing to, well, we hope they look forward to it. We think they do. They seem pleased to see us. But between times, all the time they're receiving a constant flow of information coming out from the UK, because the Isolation League, who have a weekly exhortation being done and a monthly Bible study, those are all being translated into Russian by a whole group of Russian or Russian-speaking brothers and sisters across the world, actually. And so they get translated and they get sent out to them in packs of two or three at a time. When we can manage it, we produce a magazine, Dobre Vesti, which means good news, glad tidings. And there's a constant flow of books being translated. David Pierce, he does a Bible reading group where they do verse by verse. And as he does this and does the notes, he then creates a book from it and then gets it translated. And Dima out in Siberia through the winter, when there isn't a fat lot to do in Siberia, in the snow, he translates books. So actually, of all things, the Russian-speaking brothers and sisters, probably outside of English-speaking brothers and sisters, probably have the best Christadelphian library in the world. I would think so, because you know they've got everything from Elpis Israel to Harry Whittaker. Yeah, you know, and they got a whole range of views out there. So they can take their pick of whose view of Revelation they want to follow as well, or you know, or who is Gog really? More of that another time. Well, ask me about it later. They get newsletters. You know, we try and write to them on something a little bit more personal than just an Isolation League study. And there's regular email contact, and there's a Russian speaking WhatsApp group where brothers and sisters get together themselves. So there's something far more than just our, well, you know, one visit a year and then they've gone, and that we try and keep in touch with them. But the highlight of our year, and hopefully of their year, for many of them, is the Bible school. And here we are. This was the last one we had in summer 2019. You know, it's a lot of work, but for Mary and I, but we miss it. We really do, because it's a massive highlight for our year as well. There were about 140 there of brothers and sisters and children and contacts last time we held it. It's grown over the last few years. And it's held in Kazan. Kazan is about 500 miles east of Moscow. It's quite a task for folks to get there. The Kazakhs, and the Kazakhs come en masse. Two sisters in two of the main centres book all the travel tickets for all these Kazakh families that come across. And it's you know, the working ones tend to have to stay at home working. So it's basically, we call them the Kazakh grannies. And you've got the Kazakh grannies and then a lot of teens and children, and not many in between. But there's usually 50 to 60 of them who come by. They get a bus and then a local train, and then they finally get on the sort of transcontinental trains. And for them, it's 48 to 72 hours travel. Yeah. You imagine what it'd be like being in the same clothes for 3 days. And then you arrive and it's straight into Bible school. You know, no letting up. Let's do the readings and then have a break and a bread. And they travel through that. We are in awe of them, because I don't think they've lost anyone yet on the way. It really is incredible. Even the Russians and the Belarusians who come to the Bible school, for them, it's maybe 1 to 2 days' travel, unless they live in Kazan region, and the fortunate ones, you know, can just, you know, get a bus or a local train to the venue. The Ukrainians, they have their own Bible school. What we, for many years, there was one, and then we split it into two and said, we'll have the Eastern East Bible School, and we'll have the Western East Bible School. So one in Kazan, one in Kiev. But since 2014, the Kiev one has really almost been exclusively Ukrainians because of the issues from 2014 when Russia annexed Crimea and supported the separatist parts of Ukraine. But in all the years we've been running the Bible school in Kazan, one brother has come over from Ukraine, Brother Igor Bakai, who you'll see a little bit on this. And he's come over because he's a fantastic translator, really faithful brother. And so he's made what has been quite a long, circuitous journey to get in to Russia and join us at the Bible school. Brother Igor Bakai lives in Kiev. He's 61, and his wife died of cancer a couple of years ago. He has a son who is only 7. But I just want you to think about that. He's in Kiev at the moment. And if you see me on my phone, it's probably because I'm trying to talk to him and find out how he is. You know, it's desperate for him. Okay. We also have to get to Kazan. And this is where my hair fell out, because we take a UK team to help organise and run the Bible school for the brothers and sisters. It's usually maybe up to 10 in that team, including Mary and myself. But also there's an independent sort of non-CBM funded Youth Week, which runs alongside. It used to be, we used to have Bible school in the summer, and Youth Week was in the winter, where they could all go and get cold at some sanatorium. But it was realised some years ago that actually, because some of the youth going to Youth Week had to be accompanied by a senior. So Youth Week had a bunch of Kazakh grannies on it, which didn't quite seem right. So in the end, they said, why don't we have Youth Week at the same venue at the same time as Bible school, and then we can have all the generations there, all travelling together, and that's what we do. So there'll be maybe, it might be up to 10 from the UK going for Youth Week, a couple of organisers, a speaker, and UK young people who are going to meet Russian and Kazakh young people and bond with them and make friendships, which can be really good for the future. So, you know, we've had maybe 20 then in the UK group. You know, herding cats. Do you use that term out here, herding cats? Yeah, herding cats. That's kind of what it's like for me. And I count down the steps of the journey. Okay, we get in the car and we drive to the airport. We leave the car there. Then we get on a plane, having found everybody and got everybody through check-in in good time. And we get a flight to Moscow, which might be two flights because you change on the way. And then from there, we get a train. It's the nice bit of travel we do. Get this fast train from the airport into the city. And then when we get into the city, then we go round the city on the subway, the metro, which is very exciting because of the beautiful stations in the Moscow metro. They're world famous, aren't they? I don't have much time to look at them because I'm usually worrying about who's getting lost or left behind. And Mary's usually probably running around saying, Mark tells you, you know, follow him. You can't, no good waving a Christadelphian magazine around there. And then when we get to Kazanskaya station on the far side of Moscow, and where we board a train at about, I don't know, it's about 11 o'clock at night. And we get the overnight train to Kazan. And it's like this, it's a double-decker train. And it's all split up into compartments where you've got two beds below, two beds above. So all these refined UK brothers and sisters, you know, who are used to having their own space, suddenly find themselves sharing with another UK couple, or worse still, maybe we've got an odd number, and therefore we end up with a compartment that's got three Brits and an unknown Russian who's going to pitch up. there you've really got fun, haven't you? Because you don't know what each other's saying. And eventually you get off the train in Kazan, at which point you meet up with all the other Russians who've been travelling and the Kazakhs who've been coming across, so that you then, we hire a bus, a couple of buses that will take everybody out to the venue, which is maybe 45 minutes drive outside Kazan. So it takes us over 24 hours to get there. And it is an epic, I don't know why I'm even telling you this, some of you have travelled longer than that just to get here, haven't you? But it's slow going and it's good fun. The journey's only part of the logistics of Bible school, because we've got there five nationalities, we're speaking two main languages, because typically the Ukrainians, the Belarusians, the Kazakhs, they all speak Russian. So the whole thing is delivered in Russian, but a lot translated from English. We've got brothers and sisters, but it's also a Bible school for contacts who've been being taught the truth back at home. It's for youth who are going on the youth week. It's for children. We have two main speakers. So we have a bit like this week, two main speakers doing studies for the main body of brothers and sisters. But at the same time, we have foundations classes going on for the contacts. So we go through 19 lessons to cover all the foundations of first principles in the week. So we have two or three leaders of that. Actually, it's two Brits, but we use Brother Dima Krasovin. He used to translate, and his translations were far longer than anything we said, which kind of scuppers it when you're trying to keep to time. And in the end, we just said, Dima, just do the session yourself, all right? And his sessions are still the longest. You know, you come out of the main studies and Dima's foundations class is still going strong. But he's very, very thorough. He's great. Some years we managed to do teenage classes as well. That's for like 13 to 15-year-olds, because at 16 they can go on Youth Week. And those who are 12 and below, we would normally have four sisters who would be helping to and running, not helping, would be running the children's classes as well. And then separate to us, there's a Youth Week speaker and a brother and sister perhaps organising that. So across this Bible school, we have five simultaneous sessions going on at any one time. It takes quite a bit of translating to translate the timetable, as you can imagine. And working out who's translating for which bits and who's doing which bits, because the UK brethren, the speakers and myself and the foundations class folks will do, you know, will lead readings as well and thoughts and evening sessions and all of that stuff. Four of those sessions needs a translator. So we need four translators for every single session all through the day. The poor translators, they work their socks off. We actually hire somebody who's not a Christadelphian, but is a Christian, so he gets the language. We hire somebody to do the main studies, so that we've got somebody consistent through those. Guess who doesn't get a translator? It's the children's classes that don't get a translator. So poor old Mary, who organises with all the other sisters these children's classes, they go into a session, and what they do each day, they grab some poor unsuspecting Russian or Kazakh and say, can you teach tomorrow? And they give them the lesson to teach the lesson. And then the UK sisters do then a whole craft activity with the children around that lesson, all done with kind of, you know, scissors and you know, and yeah, that kind of thing, yeah. So we've learned various words over the years. We have three main studies a day, three reading sessions. There's a lighter session each day. And all of that we arrange remotely in advance. It's nailed down before we get there, right down to who's translating for each session. So it feels like all the work goes on in advance. This is just kind of a flavour of it now. Here's main studies. Those of you from the back of his head might recognise Brother Kitson Reed. Kitson and Allison. And it was the whole clan, wasn't it? all the lads and Keziah, they came out with us in 2018. And they were great. Everybody loved having them there. Kits and I'd asked several times to go, and he was very wary because he had heard about what racism is like in Russia, and it's you know, it ain't great. Thankfully, most people thought that they must be football stars, you know, these strapping young lads going out there, so they were kind of treated like royalty. So they got away with it pretty well. But that's Kitson doing a study. That was in an upstairs room. We decanted last time we were there to the theatre, which could seat, I think, about 300. But we would never have more than 140 there. And once you've split off all these classes, you've maybe got 50 or 60 sitting there who are having studies. And that's kind of one half of the room there with Dima, the translator, on the right-hand end there, and Dima Krasovin here in the middle. I should say, very limited imagination when it comes to names, those Russians. Very limited imagination, you know. Vladimir, Dima, Boris, Sergei, yeah, Yevgeny. There's kind of not a lot more than that. So you get used to the fact that most of them have the same names. I did ask somebody once, I said, why have you all got the same names? And I said, well, we're named after famous Russians. Okay, not many of them then. All right, fair enough. Here's foundations class. The foundations class has a really fluctuating number, depending on sort of what work has been going on back at home. You know, these are folks who are not coming to the truth fresh. They've perhaps spent the last year attending one of the meetings, maybe one of the house groups in Kazakhstan, or maybe they've had online instruction from someone, and then they come and they get their own dedicated week of first principles. And there are those who turn up in those classes saying, I want to be baptized this week. And you can tell who they are when you go into the classes, because they're the ones with notebooks. They're the ones who ask you questions. You know, and they won't let you get away with anything, you know, because they want to be absolutely sure of what they believe and to see it backed up. So there's Dima having led one of his lengthy sessions, and here's the group from, this is the 2018 group, out of which 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 4 of that group were baptized that year. Do you know what? It's fantastic to teach a group like that. You know, there's nothing like it, is there, to have men and women sitting there wanting to hear the gospel with a clear aim in mind, you know, and all they want you to do is share it with them so that they can lap up the good news. I love the foundations classes, and that's pretty much all I get to do, because I'm never one of the main speakers, am I? I'm sort of running around behind the scenes. But the bit I do is foundations classes. If I'm not doing teens classes, because I, with David Pearce and myself, have tended to share the teens classes. The teens group is a much smaller group, because there's maybe just a few of those in that 13 to 15 group, because they're coming up from the children's class and they're going on to youth week. But that was the 2019 group. Thought it interesting, this little group here, that's 2016. And of those 6 young people that you can see there, 4 of those young people have now been baptized, which is, again, is fantastic. One of them, let's have a look at these. The one on the left, Andre. Andre's the son of a sister who herself was a contact. Only a couple of years before that, she came along herself as a contact to Bible school, so she sat through foundation sessions. Her son, who came to the truth for the first time on that occasion, he sat through teen sessions. She married an English brother, migrated to the UK, and he was baptized last year in the UK. He's now doing lots of translation work for us in the UK. The one next to him, Pavel. Pavel, we never even met Pavel. Nobody even knew about Pavel. He turned up with his sister, who's sitting behind him, and his dad. His dad was a brother that we hadn't realized had been baptized, because there are some baptisms occasionally that pass unnoticed. That's another story altogether. But Pavel came along with his father and his sister, and he came along and said, I've come because I, you know, my father has been doing the reading of the Bible with me, and I want to be baptized as well. And the two lads here, who were just little squirts at the time, who are much bigger lads now, that's two of Dima Krasovin's boys, two out of the three, who've now put on the saving name of Jesus Christ. You know, wonderful for that family. There's three generations now in that family in Christ. I'd like to say they're the first three-generational Russian family, but I'm not entirely sure that that's correct. But they're certainly the most well-known one, let's say. And the children's classes. Here we go with the children's classes. Sister Anna MacDonald there, who lived out in Russia for a year, showing something. I don't know. I can't even tell what it says from here because it's written really weird. No. Let's pass on with that one. You see, my Russian's not so great. But I think, you have a fun time in the children's class, don't you, Mary? She's nodding reluctantly. She is. Now, those of you who teach Sunday school, who teaches Sunday school here or has ever taught Sunday school? Go on, raise a hand. There's no shame. Okay. You know, what's your normal age span in your Sunday school class? Is it usually 1 or 2 school years, maybe? Yeah, 2 or 3, maybe. So it wouldn't be like ages 3 to 12 in the same group. One of the really good things is when we moved venue for the last two Bible schools we did. Previously, the venue we were in, these are sort of sanatoriums. It sounds like somewhere you go if you're a bit mad, but that's where the Russians go on holiday. The sanatorium that we were using for 4 years from 2014, Dynamo, it was the base of the Kazan, was it volleyball or basketball? Basketball teams, so they had basketball courts and stuff there. It was also the centre for the regional Kazan rifle shooting ranges, and so you would hear through the day, you would hear all this sort of popping of rifle shooting. Some of it indoors, and some of it outside. There'd just be these sort of long trenches with targets at the end, you know, little human shapes. That people would be going out there and offloading their guns into. We moved on from that venue because, as the Russians themselves said, the food here is like school dinners. Now, for the Russians to say that, it was pretty bad. We had a run of food poisoning. So we moved to another centre, which actually its focus was not shooting or basketball, but was like a health spa. Again, you know, take that with a... You know, not quite like this is a health spa, but healthy in a Russian sort of way. But the beauty, sorry, this was a very long way round to get to saying the beauty of this place is that where we were teaching the children, instead of being like an outside tent where they could run away, and did frequently, in this venue, it was a room with a door that you could guard. So essentially... The sisters running the sessions, one would be helping with the craft and the other would guard the door. And you could only go out the door if you needed the toilet. And Mary and I, we had the room across from this room so that anybody needing the toilet, they went to our toilet so that, you know, they were kept in sight because some of those children, well, you know, you might think of Russian as being a place of discipline. It ain't. It really isn't. And here we are. Here's some of the lovely stuff that they do. We think it's great because we take suitcases full of this stuff out there with us And then we send it away with the parents and the grandparents. So they spend all week making all this great stuff. And we have a lovely display of it at the end that everybody comes to see. You know, maybe they've been doing the story of Joseph or the plagues or, I don't know, the life of Jesus. So they've made all sorts of things through the week. And then at the end, it's all gone back into somebody else's bag. So we travel light coming home. And at the end of the week, of course, no Bible school, well, apart from this one perhaps, unless you're hiding something from me, no Bible school is complete without a children's performance at the end. And of course, no children's performance is complete without tea towels as head coverings. And so we have, well, I don't, maybe you don't have that over here, but every Sunday school play in the UK always has children with tea towels on their heads. Do you know what a tea towel is? Oh, you do? Okay, so I was getting a few blank looks. I wasn't sure if I was, colloquialism again. Mary, which story is that one? Is that Abraham sitting outside his tent, maybe? Could be. She can't remember. They're all tea towels, aren't they? This one here, any prizes for guessing what that one is there?
Three wise men.
Not even close, Marco. No, if I tell you that those are not COVID face coverings they're wearing, but they are actually pretending to be bandits. Okay, could that be the Good Samaritan, maybe? Oh, yes it is. Yes, I think Mary was just there to make sure they did what they were supposed to do at the right time. And here they are singing a hymn. And one of the lovely things we do is we teach them a hymn each year and the children all sing it together. Now, what we do is, of course, we have a Russian hymn book. It's a hymn book that's made up partly of Green Hymn Book, Christelphian Hymn Book hymns, and partly of Praise the Lord's, translated by a couple of sisters back in the, I suppose, before 2000 even. Imagine the work to fit Russian words into an English meter. So you're talking not just translating, you're rewriting the hymns, but then we teach them one of these to sing, and for those who are Brits out there, we have a transliteration of it. The only one I can remember is Oochie Poochie, because there's one that starts with Oochie Poochie Gaspod, which is Teach Me Thy Way, O Lord. There's nobody Russian in the audience, is there, to disagree with that? But they do a lovely job of singing it together. And while all that's going on, Youth Week's taking place, and all these relationships are forming, and young people, of course, the young people tend to have the English, don't they? Our young people don't have the Russian, but the Russians have the English, so that there's much more friendship and communication going on there, you know, and they have a great time together. You know, they'll play games and they'll chat and they'll put stuff on for the rest of the Bible school. They organise a sports event for everybody to take part in. This last time they did something really good, which was they were all asked to go and speak to a particular brother or sister. And ask them a whole series of questions like, you know, tell me about your background. You know, what kind of work do you do? How did you come to the truth? This is Rebecca asking Brother Igor Bakai about his background, finding out about his life. And the stuff they came back with, because the stories, we've heard some interesting stories this week, but the stories they come back with from some of these Russians and Kazakhs, quite awe-inspiring in terms of what they've been through and maybe how they came to the truth. It isn't all serious. There are some fun activities. There is a concert at the end of the week. So when the children do their performance, then many, many participate and put on their own little bit. What do the Brits do? Well, the Youth Week they put on, they normally do some kind of miming, you know, a sort of charades thing. You know, they'll act out a Bible story. We've all got to guess what it is, because of course they can do that without any speaking. The British adults, of course, we all sing good old Christadelphian hymns that we're very familiar with, that they might not be. Some of the Russians will read a poem. Some of them will have written a poem that week. Somebody did a poem once on one verse out of Jeremiah. We don't know why. But everybody clapped it. Of course, we didn't understand a word of it because it was in Russian. But, you know, there's this sort of skill that's coming to the front. Sister Mila will play the piano and sing. We had a Russian version of Hallelujah, not the Hallelujah chorus, but as in the Leonard Cohen song, you know, but a Russian version of it. We recognised the tune and the Hallelujah bits. And then this group got up and did an arm-in-arm sort of Russian song. I had no idea what it was about. But what an interesting group, because there on the left is Brother Igor Bakai, a Ukrainian. And here in the middle is the rest of them are a group of Russians, arm in arm. The brother on the end there is Brother Edward Voronin, lives in Bryansk in Western Russia. He's been blind since an accident 60 plus years ago. He's quite an amazing brother because he speaks English as well, does Brother Edward, although he also understands Braille, English Braille, that is. So he gets Braille studies sent out to him. But there they are all dancing together and singing some hymns. We also go for a little day trip out. Kazan is the regional capital for the semi-autonomous region of Tatarstan in the middle of Russia there. It's 50% Muslim. And the Russian government is desperate that region does not become another Chechnya, which, you know, again, is majority Muslim and rebelled against Russia. So they give Tatarstan a very high level of autonomy to make their own decisions. And in, you know, you've got Red Square in Moscow, and the if you like, the Red Kremlin. Well, in Kazan, which was once one of the capitals of Russia, you've got the White Kremlin. So it's all white walls and battlements. And in the middle of it, you've got this humongous mosque. And you've also got right next to it a humongous Orthodox cathedral as well. This isn't even, it's not an old mosque. It was only built, I think, in the 1990s. But it sort of shows how they're trying to exist side by side. It's why it's been one of the best places for us to be for a Bible school, because we are under the radar in Russia. We're not registered as a community. We never will be able to be because of our numbers and our spread and our history. But in Kazan, they just turn a blind eye to that quite happily. And we've had, when we were at Dynamo, the manager came and sat in on one of our Bible study sessions just to see what we were talking about, and went away quite content. Thankfully, it wasn't the session that Brother David Pierce was doing on what Putin will do next. Boy, did that go off like one of them things. That was not the most popular session there. That wasn't a fun activity. We don't do those sessions anymore. Other fun activities. Well, there's at the centre we're at now, there's a little freshwater lake nearby that we go down to. It's where the baptisms take place. We decided not to tell the folks being baptised that these water snakes had been found in the pond just, you know, half an hour before. And actually, both times we've been down there, people have been saying, "Oh, look, the snake, and pulling them out and waving them around. I presume they're not poisonous. One of the real fun things, though, is the Thursday night at Bible school, we have a tea party. Now, you know, you think that's only something you can throw in Boston. But let me tell you, the Russians and the Kazakhs, they know how to throw a tea party. And everybody's told, just bring a little. So we take a little. And huge, vast acres of food suddenly appear out of nowhere. And we don't know where they even get it from. I guess it's the half day we go into Kazan. They all go round the shops and buy them out. But there's a massive amount of food available there for everybody to eat and have fellowship. And one year we had a UK versus rest of Russian speaking world singing competition, which was, I don't know, that was weird. But normally it's just chatting to each other and enjoying time together. Of course, the really important thing for us is those who are, you know, have come to Bible school because they want and they love the truth and they want to put on Christ there. And so towards the middle and the end of the week, we carry out interviews with a translator. There'll be several go on at the same time. And there've always been maybe 3, 4, 5 baptisms of those who've decided they're ready. And not everybody does, but those who've decided they're ready and they want to be baptized. Now, there's Pavel's baptism. The young lad who was been in the teen class. Remember the old deer who I said just wanted to fall off the edge? That's her being baptized. This is in standing height water, so they kind of go down forwards rather than backwards. This is this pool, which was in a tent, and it was like a square pool. This is what I called the Goldilocks pool, because the 1 year we were there, they didn't really understand what we wanted the pool for, so it was at sauna heat. And that was when Pavel went in. That's why he sort of looks a bit, because it was so hot. It was so hot. We came out like lobsters from it. Oh, thank you, Mary. Time out. The next year, the water went off partway through the week, which was a little bit awkward. And when they did get it back on, they could only very quickly fill, you know, this sort of depth. Well, that's fine. You can baptize somebody in that sitting down. But it was freezing cold. But the next year, it was just right. Yeah. The first year, actually, it had been muddy brown, and we weren't really sure what had been in it. But now we baptise in the lake instead, and you can see there you've actually got Brother Igor from the Ukraine and Brother Victor from Bryansk. Two brothers, actually, who met at an Esperanto conference in Cuba. Where the Christadelphians had an Esperanto stand. This was, of course, in the Iron Curtain days, when that was the only way we could preach to the East, was through another language, kind of where it got under the radar. Both of these brethren came to the first knowledge of the truth at the same time, in the same place, and they're still friends after all these years. They're both translators. Victor usually comes with us to Belarus. That's one of the Krasovin lads being baptized. And this was the year before when Nelia from Kazakhstan was baptized. And of course, we have the joy of receiving these new brothers and sisters into fellowship. There's probably a bit more ceremony to it than there is in the UK, where we stand and we say something formal and we shake the hand. There's a stack of books and a hymn book to give them, and there's presents from the brothers and sisters. It's, you know, it really is. It's absolutely lovely. There's nothing like it. There really isn't. Which means that actually, they get flowers as well. Look at that, they even get flowers. How nice is that after your baptism? Because we do a breaking of bread straight after the baptisms. Give them time to get dry, but that's all. It means that the goodbyes at the end of the week really are so very sad. They really are. And this was, I didn't realise it at the time, that was the last time we saw Brother Pavel. Brother Pavel in his 90s. Travelled from Omsk region in Siberia. So a couple of days travel for Brother Pavel. But such a cheery brother. Tried to sell us garlic seeds for some reason. We're not really sure why. But always happy to see you. And that's us saying goodbye to him on the last time we saw him, because he fell asleep in Christ in the year after that. And here's one of our goodbyes in Moscow, as it happens. That's just outside. Well, that's on the edge of Red Square. You can see the wall of Red Square, the Tomb of the Unknown Warrior, just behind us. That's with Victor and Igor, because as it turned out, they were both on the same overnight train with us back to Moscow, and then they were heading off to Ukraine and to further west in Russia. And here's the Krasovins departing as well. Do you know what the first thing is that the British team do when the 20 of us get on the bus to start the journey back? We get the bus from the venue into Kazan, and we've got a 2-hour wait then before the overnight train. It shames me to say it, but the first thing we do is head to McDonald's. In fact, what happens is, it's a bit like David chasing the Amalekites. Half of the group are left with the stuff, whilst the other half go off in search of the meat, and then they swap over after an hour. Thank goodness McDonald's have menus in two languages. And then we get to Moscow, come off an overnight train, get the metro into Red Square. There's a McDonald's. So it's egg and bacon McMuffins all round. Beautiful. You know what's really sad? I'll finish with this, actually. I think what's really sad is 2019, we didn't realise it at the time, but 2019 was the last time we were there. And, you know, the most recent pictures you've seen were then. Because we start our visits around Easter. And by Easter 2020, that was it. 2020, 2021, no visits at all. We kept waiting for things to open up, but if you're only going for a week and the requirement is to quarantine for 2 weeks on arrival, that kind of scuppers that, doesn't it? A lot of very vulnerable elderly folks there as well that we felt we couldn't put them at risk, even if we could go. The one positive that came out of it actually was that some of those who were disappointed by this started Zoom meetings in May 2020. So only probably a month and a half after we'd started doing it at our own meeting. This was a group of Russians living in Montenegro, those that Renat, when he came out to America, those that he left behind there. Because they couldn't meet in Montenegro, they started Zoom meetings and put out the message on WhatsApp to all the Russian brothers and sisters, Russian speakers, you want to come and join a Breaking the Bread on Zoom? Do it. And so all of a sudden, from no fellowship, for many of them, except once or twice a year, all of a sudden they started having a Sunday Breaking of Bread service that's expanded now. So now they have a midweek Bible reading class as well. And after last summer's online Bible school that we ran with them, they started a Sunday school as well. A Sunday school that's driven, believe it or not, by a Russian sister in Australia. So she comes on from Australia, a family from Montenegro, a family in St. Petersburg, bringing their children on to have a joint Russian language Sunday school. And we were able to hold online Bible schools. Unfortunately, of course, only for those who could get online, which limits it. But at least some got that benefit and hopefully can spread it around. And there's regularly 20 to 30 screens from Belarus, Ukraine, Russia, Kazakhstan, Montenegro, Australia, UK. We provide a monthly speaker now at their request from the UK. And there's always a translator on, so it's easy. They just choose each time. And we do a monthly guest appearance at the readings as well. That's where we are now. So I'm not going to tell you about the Montenegro folks, whoops, but I will leave you with that picture of another happy Bible school. And we love visiting them, and maybe spare a thought for them all. Spare a thought for them, brothers and sisters, because, you know, there's two sides to everything, isn't there? And we're discovering this at the moment because Brother Igor Bakai, you know, he's in the worst situation possible, along with a number of other brothers and sisters in Kiev or in Kharkiv. There's a young sister there we've just been finding out about today. And in other centres, Kherson in the south, that's been surrounded and is being shelled probably as we speak. There's brothers and sisters there in the Ukraine whose lives are being ripped apart. But you know, and this is the thing that we perhaps forget as well, every one of those in Russia is being impacted by our sanctions. You know, the things that our governments are doing, saying, you know, we've got to bring Putin to heel here. You know, please don't think I'm being political at all, because we have to be so non-political in this. But, you know, the things our governments are doing are going to make life really tough for the Russian brothers and sisters as well. And they feel that because, you know, there's not a lot of money there to throw around and savings to pull on. So, you know, in your prayers, please think about all of them and remember them before God, because we're all just one big family in Christ, no matter how far the East is from the West.